welcome to another episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClanrock, and with me, the sock master himself, Nicholas Moreau.
What's up, Hunter? Happy almost Christmas, man.
It's almost Christmas time. Socks are being hung from the what do you call that? The mantel place, the fireplace.
Yeah, everybody's got one of those.
everybody's got socks inside the stockings.
Yeah.
You have a fireplace, Nick?
Oh, I've got three.
Oh, yeah. I mean, up there, it's just like, that's just standard.
No, I don't have a fireplace. I wish I did right now. It's pretty cold up here. I'm sure you guys, you're still in t-shirts and shorts down in sunny Southern California.
Well, I am wearing shorts, but I have a long sleeve shirt on. You know, just to keep the chill out a little bit.
What is it, like 65?
Yeah, I mean, it's a balmy 65. That's pretty chilly for us.
Oh, God.
Don't hate. Yeah. It rained last week, and the whole town turned into complete mayhem, as per usual. So it is what it is here in Southern California.
Yeah.
So our constitutions are weak.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't complain too much.
Hey, man, this is episode number 30.
Is it?
Rounding up the year.
Wow, happy 30th.
I kind of like that, you know, round number, rounding up the year. This will be our last episode, probably before the new year, when we'll get to our top 10 lists and everything from 2018. We talked about it before. We're both in agreement. We don't like to do our lists too soon. We like to wait for the year to finally be over before we reflect on it. Right, Nick?
I agree. I think, you know, we've been burned in the past by some great albums coming out in December that might have made our top 10. And I also think, you know, there's been recent albums that I'd like a little more time with before I think about my top 10 too much.
I agree with that. And it's nice to kind of see other lists and see where people are going with them and discover new albums that might be in consideration. But yeah, definitely some late year releases that I'm still spending time with. There's been a lot of good music this year. I don't think there's been a whole lot of standout records that seem to be number one for everybody as there have it in the past in some years, but, strong year. We talked about a lot of records this year too, Nick.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I don't want to spoil too much of the top 10 episode, but I think, it'll be good to reflect when we get to that moment on this past year, not only from a music standpoint, but from this enterprise we embarked on. So I'm excited to talk about that.
For sure. Also, if you're listening to this, you really should check out the interview I did with John Grant that was just posted.
Oh yeah.
If you haven't got a chance to do that yet, he was super fun to talk to.
God, nicest guy. I mean, that was a great interview, Hunter.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And we had a lot of good interviews this year. I was thinking back on all of them, and I really enjoyed talking to all those artists, and he was a great one to end our first year on. So John Grant, man, if you can see him live, I just got a few more dates left, but probably by the time you're hearing this, his US tour will be wrapped up. So you'll have to wait till next year to see him.
But I also think, you know, it was more than an interview. It was really just a conversation that it felt like I was eavesdropping on. So
yeah,
it was really good.
He gave me some really good music recommendations too that I've been checking out since we spoke, and you know, I'm sure talk to him forever and have a lot of knowledge, be turned onto a lot of different things.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I would recommend anybody listening to this check out the interview that Hunter did with John Grant. It's up as of this week. Fantastic, right before the holidays. Great interview.
And speaking of the holidays, Nick, a little bit later in this episode, I think we're going to talk about some Christmas music, our thoughts on it, our some favorites, maybe some low lights of Christmas music over the year. But before that, we got to get into our last real album review of the year. You know, this is one that I couldn't leave alone, at least. It's the 1975, A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships. This is the third album from the 1975, coming on the heels of the most excellently titled I Love It When You Sleep, For You Are So Beautiful and Unaware. A number one record on both sides of the pond, by the way, Nick, their last album. 1975, coming back, third album on one of my favorite record labels these days, Dirty Hit. I kind of had to talk you into this one, Nick, and I'm curious. I know you weren't really too into the 1975 before, and I'm wondering if that has changed at all with this record.
Well, I have to say, let me just set the stage here. When you brought this up to me, I don't think it was too resistant on the idea of reviewing this record, but I have to say, I very much feel like I was going to sit back and listen to you rave about the 1975, or at least talk about them, because I'm fairly unfamiliar with them compared to you. I know who they are. I know that they're much bigger than I ever thought they were. You know, when I first saw them a few years ago on a bill, they were playing venues that are fairly large in Portland, and they were like instantly sold out months before the show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who is this? Like, what is going on here? And then I didn't pay too much attention to their first two records. I listened to the second one, I think, per your guidance, and it was fine. And this one I obviously spent some more time with, and I'm happy to give you my thoughts. My first thought is, what the fuck is going on with this album? Like, but it's the most peculiar feeling, because at the same time, I still don't turn it off. I'm like fascinated with what's going on, and I don't know if it's good, I don't know if it's bad, but I don't know that it matters, because I'm still listening to it. There's some amazing songs. I think Give Yourself a Try, for example, is such a great song. Love It If We Made It. I mean, there's such good songs. I think the album is too long, but it doesn't seem to matter. I'm lost, Hunter. I'm lost with this album. Seriously, well,
that makes total sense what you're saying. And I think I'm going to come down sound fairly enthusiastic about this record as we talk about it, but I feel the same way that you do, that it's, I was expecting you to come back kind of hard on me with this record. So I'm glad that that it's got your attention and you're listening to it. It's crazy. It's a crazy album. And to go back to you talking about their, you know, sort of being unaware of them, but realizing that they were selling out pretty big venues. And, you know, when they first came out with their self-titled album, they were kind of billed as like an indie boy band to UK audiences. And they were seen as like boy band with guitars, but kind of the same structure. And their audience quickly gained an audience of like mainly teenage girls. And you know me, Nick, as a teenage girl at heart, even I was not like really wooed by their first record. It kind of, I thought some of the songwriting was pretty good, but it was kind of a paint by numbers sort of English indie guitar record, I thought. Yeah. And then the second record came out and it really started to like morph into something else. That it was a huge, like, it's longer than this one for sure. It's about as long as the title of the album suggests, but you know, they were playing with different styles. There was like, it wasn't just, you know, British indie. It was like elements of emo, elements of R&B, and kind of like, you know, Frank Ocean-y vocoded vocals, abstract sounds. Each of their albums begins with a self-titled track that has the same lyrics, but they don't sound exactly, they sound like completely different on each album as well. Mm-hmm. So then we get to this album, and all of a sudden I'm starting to see just so much hype for it. They've been releasing like singles for almost 6 months. We Give Yourself a Try, I think, came out in like May or June
of this. Right, and I feel like when this album came out, I was like, wait, didn't it come out months ago? That's how I reacted.
Well, they've been hyping it for a long time, and it is supposedly the first half of an even bigger work, where the second record gets released supposedly early next year. It's called Notes on a Conditional Form, and these two albums together are part of a greater project called Music for Cars, which Matty Healy, the front man of the 1975, has been teasing for years. But they were selling at venues. They weren't really getting a lot of press and things that you or I would probably be reading, except for the NME, which I still read pretty constantly, but this album in the lead up to it, and then the first initial reviews dropping, I started to see like mainstream critics really getting into this, especially the song "Love It If We Made It," which is, I mean, it's we didn't start the fire for this generation. He took all the songs from all the lyrics from Headlines and put it together with like an incredible chorus. But you know, it's an attempt at that Billy Joel song basically. And I think he would freely admit that.
Yeah.
And Pitchfork gives it Best New Music. And I'm all of a sudden like, where did this like teeny bopper weirdo band all of a sudden, what are they doing differently now that is gaining mainstream acceptance? Yeah. And I think it all has to do with the fact that there's a song on here that sounds like Fitter Happier by Radiohead. I think that's 100% of the reason why they're being taken seriously, because they're not a different band. This is a pop record for sure.
Yeah.
First and foremost. But let's talk about what it actually sounds like, because you're like, what the hell is going on when I'm listening to this album? Every song sounds different from the other.
Well, it's in, like, different styles. Like,
I mean, there's R&B, a free jazz song.
Right.
There's a smooth jazz song. There's R&B songs. There's the Fitter Happier track with the computerized spoken word going on over it. Mm-hmm. Is this the album that describes our time? Like, okay, computer, or is this just simply the work of a talented but scatterbrained pop songwriter infiltrating mainstream culture?
Oh man, I don't think I'm ready to put it where OK Computer is. I do think it's an album that is very much in our time, in the sense that, like, yeah, all these different genres, and we're a little scatterbrained, and we jump from one thing to the next and have a 12-second attention span. But I do think, like, at the same time, it's an album that's fairly long, and I've said that before, and that seems like against our time in a way, in a world that's moving more and more towards like the singles based format.
Right. But how long was Drake's album Scorpion earlier this year? Right. You know, there's the cynical part of my brain knows the more tracks you have, the more streams you get, the more that works with today's music economy.
So my wife, we were listening to this a couple nights ago, and she actually said, this sounds like a Drake album.
Yeah, well, there are definitely tracks that sound like Drake songs.
Yeah.
I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah. So yeah.
Like, what about Two Time? Like, that song, the third track on the album, that's basically a Drake song. He dropped some of his vocals on it. There you go.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's a few songs like that. I think there's a few rock songs. I was surprised by the lack of rock songs, the guitar songs.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, like, 90s R&B songs feels.
I mean, how many rock songs are there on this album? I'd say Give Yourself a Try, Love It If We Made It. It's probably It's Not Living If It's Not With You, which is kind of like a Bon Jovi, like, rock song. The last track, I Always Want to Die Sometimes, Maddie Healy said was inspired by Aerosmith's I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Yeah, and, you know, in apart from Give Yourself a Try and Love It If We Made It, like, the best songs aren't really the rock songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but I also think like it's an interesting format where, and I'm sure bands have tried this, where the songs are kind of different genres, but it's not so egregious that you go from like reggae ska to like punk rock, you know, but, it kind of all fits together in a weird way, but I still don't really know what's happening. I also, it really, in the end, it just feels like an emo record, like a modern emo record to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's to its credit. You know, we've talked about emo earlier, or a few months ago, earlier in the year. And it's kind of this resurgence of the genre away from what the format was maybe in the early 2000s. I think it's emo is almost genre-less now, if that makes sense. And this seems to be maybe the best form of what modern emo might look like.
Well, it makes sense listening to this record with you know, probably the world's biggest emo artist, Drake, next to like Little Peep, who, you know, is being played all over the place now, and kind of the way emo and hip hop have infused over the past few years. I'm glad Matty Healy doesn't like try to rap on this record. And I think he knows his strengths. And I think also to their credit, the fact that we think of them as a rock band at all is impressive, because as you said, they're not really. And yeah, even on the last album, I Like It When You Sleep, the best song is probably like Someone Else, and that's not a rock record at all.
Yeah. And you know, I am confused in many ways by this record, because I like it, I don't really know why, and I want to own it, and I don't know, like, and I feel weird about it. So if that means anything to anybody listening, I doubt it does, but I think people have to, who don't know the 1975, have to give this a chance and kind of be very open-minded about it, because I think, you know, you talked about this with John Grant, but there's some amazing pop in this record. You talked about really good pop music on the radio. I was thinking about this band when he was mentioning it, because I think if you went, you know, 30, 40 years from now, you know, the bands of that time will probably talk about the pop of this record.
Yeah, I really like this record too, but I know a lot of people who don't, and I know a lot of people who do, and it seems to be really divisive in a lot of ways, and I think that's fine, and that's to its credit. It's like, it's definitely pretentious. It's definitely like very brash, and also, you know, Matty Healy's personality in interviews to me is great, because he's like a proper like pop star. He's a proper rock star. And we don't have that many of those. And he's very open about, you know, his addiction that he's recovered from, and that, you know, in between these two albums. And that's all over the record. And there's just nothing like it. The fact that he talks about Little Peep, he talks about Kanye and Trump in that song. I think those are the things that make people think of it as an album of the moment. And like you said, the musical diversity. I should mention this band is from Manchester in Northern England. And I was speaking with a Mancunian recently about great Manchester bands throughout history, you know, the Smiths and Joy Division and Oasis, Stone Roses. And I mentioned like newer groups like the 1975, and he goes, well, hold on, the 1975 are not from Manchester. They're from the internet. Which is, I think, pretty apt, because I think that's how this band came about. And they're like a Tumblr writ large, you know, all the things that are inspiring to Matty Healy and the rest of the band, they kind of spew it all out there. And it seems like something that could be meaningful, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it is meaningful, but I know that a lot of the songs are really catchy, and it's a lot of fun, for at least for me, to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I feel also like when I put it on, I'm listening to one of my favorite radio stations, and there are no commercials. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you put on an album, like, you're in for the album experience, and I don't know that this is a traditional album experience. It does feel like, you know, I'm listening to a great radio station with songs I kind of know, with no commercial, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But and I don't, not to say the album is fine. I don't know what it is. I don't know how I feel about it yet, but I know I like it. I just can't put a word onto how, like, it's just, I don't think I've seen an album like this before.
Well, I'm definitely interested in seeing how it ages over the next year or so. It's coming out here at the end of 2018, and I'm curious. I suspect that I will keep listening to it throughout 2019, but I'm curious to see how it holds up and how it kind of plays off of the music coming out. And they do have that other record supposedly coming next year as well. So it may be impossible to get away from the 1975. I think they're playing every single festival that's been announced for next year so far.
Right. And, you know, not only that, like, their North America tour seems like it starts pretty, like, in March or so. So I guess what you're saying is maybe that record drops before that tour.
I think they're recording it right now, supposedly. But, you know, whenever bands say they're coming out with, like, another album really fast, they rarely do. I think, you know, it took U2, like, 4 years for the Songs of Experience to come out after Songs of Innocence, which was supposed to be, like, the quick follow-up. So who knows? I'd be impressed if they get it out quickly, though.
Well, I think we can break the news that it's almost a lock that they'll be playing Coachella in April.
Yeah. The lack of a Los Angeles date and tour dates in the U.S. going into April, that would surmise that that is very likely. I wonder if they'll be the very top of the bill on one of the days or not.
Second build, I would imagine.
They're almost there, I would say. You know, to me, this and the Arctic Monkeys record, Tranquility Base, from earlier this year, are probably the two big conceptual, you know, just huge rock records of the year for me. And, you know, I think their fan base, a lot of the Arctic Monkeys fan base might be at odds with kind of like the teeny bopper image of the 1975, but give yourself a try and check this record out because...
Ooh, nice.
Because it's really good. There's and Dirty Hit Records, home of Wolf Alice, and you know, Pale Waves started as a 1975 cover band.
I was going to mention this. Like, I see a lot of Pale Waves sound in this, and I think you said that it was produced by some of the 1975, right?
Yeah, Matty Healy produced Pale Waves, you know, their first recordings and everything. And they're talk about another band that's playing bigger and bigger rooms, and they're on the way to pop success in a similar sense as the 1975. So there's something going on. There's something brewing in the north of England that is taking over the hearts and minds of teenagers and college students all across the world. And it's funny now to see like stodgy music critics having to like come to terms with this band.
Yeah. And you know, Pale Waves, speaking of bands that are from the internet and not necessarily from a place, I feel like they fit that bill too. If you look at their social presence, it seems very inflated compared to the rooms they play. And like, you have bands that have a smaller social presence and that's play bigger rooms, and they play smaller rooms but with a very large social presence. I've noticed that, and I feel like that's an interesting thing to like keep in mind as we see the evolution of modern bands. Like, will they get big socially before they, you know, they get that kind of live breakthrough?
Heather Baron Gracie, the front woman for Pale Waves, she's got a really good Twitter, and I think has been nurturing like a community of people and fans for years. And you know, their rooms are getting pretty big. The Fonda here in LA is a pretty big room, and playing that as a band, you know, who just put out their debut album is saying a lot. I mean, they're going to be around for a while, I think.
Yeah.
So cool. I think we're both confused about this album. We both like it. I'm pretty enthusiastic about it, but it was definitely a highly anticipated album for me this year, and it delivered. I think it's just really entertaining for me to listen to. You know, it's a long listen, but it never gets boring for me, at least.
Right. No, I'm pleasantly surprised. I do remember you mentioning this album on some of your anticipation for the year. And I'm glad it delivered. I'm definitely confused. I think probably a little more than you are, probably because I never paid much attention to the 1975. And so I kind of went into it with the knowledge that you wanted to talk about it. And I guess I'm pleasantly surprised is where I've come down on it.
What does your wife think of this record?
She likes parts of it, and then some of it she just doesn't like at all.
It has a permanent ban in the car or in my house, so I can only listen to it when I'm alone.
Headphones.
Or on headphones.
While you're writing poetry.
Yeah, but I've been doing that a lot. Yes, I get out my, you know, reading or writing poetry.
Yeah.
Reading my Rimbaud and going away at it. But yeah. Tis the season for Christmas music.
Mm-hmm.
So you told me offline, we were talking before, that you've been playing a lot, as you do in the house that has a youngster in it, especially leading into the Christmas season. What have you been rocking around the Moreau household?
Well, I mean, yeah, we've been playing a lot of Christmas music, and it strikes me that, you know, the reason I wanted to have this conversation is it seems like most people play the old hits, you know, the oldies, like the Otis Redding and Nat King Cole and that breed of Christmas music, which I think is dear to everyone. And then you've got...
But you're assuming really good taste for these people if Otis Redding and Nat King Cole are the... I think we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and you know, the classic Andy Williams album that I own on vinyl, and that's kind of what we play at the house. But there's also this period where... And I don't know that this is true. Maybe I'm just disconnected from it, but there's kind of this period of music in the 80s and 90s where there are actually really good Christmas songs that came out from well-known bands, and those seem to stay, and people still play those. And then recently, I know people put out Christmas albums and Christmas songs, but I don't know that these newer songs connect in the same way that those 80s and 90s song did. And I was curious to see, like, one, how you felt about Christmas music, if you gravitate towards the new stuff or the old stuff or that middle period. And then what are your favorite Christmas tunes?
Yeah, I feel like definitely a place where I'm more of a traditionalist in my life in terms of Christmas music. I really gravitate towards the records that were played a lot in my household growing up as a kid, you know, back when there was just CDs, and my mom had a collection of Christmas music, and we would play them nonstop during that season. So I listened to these records countless times. And for me, like, especially since I have trouble with newer Christmas songs, but I want to table that and get back to that towards the, you know, in a minute, because there are some new Christmas songs that I like, but I like the classics, and it's all about the voice for me.
Right.
You know, this is like, if you're a great vocalist, you should have put out a Christmas album, and pretty much all of them do, right? Whether you've got Aretha Franklin or like you mentioned, Otis Redding, even Mariah Carey is one of the, you know, she's basically a Christmas artist at this point, even though people really seem to like her new record. I haven't gotten around to hearing it.
I listened to it once and I thought it might be worth talking about, but I think the 1975 was a better.
So, well, we'll talk about it on the year in list, right? Because it's going to be near the top of yours.
Yeah.
there are two albums that I think of when I think about Christmas, and I don't think they're like the most obvious ones. They just happen to be albums that my mom had from great voices that I could just listen to sing anything.
Right.
And the first one, and these are albums I'm talking about, Aaron Neville's Soulful Christmas. Okay. And Aaron Neville from the Neville Brothers, beautiful, like just angelic voice that he has. I think this album came out in like the early 90s. And to me, it's just an incredible collection of Christmas songs with just like, just his voice is so well suited for it. It's so soothing and soulful. I never get sick of hearing him sing those songs. And the other one is An Old Time Christmas by Randy Travis.
Man, you're going way back.
I'm going way back. I love Randy Travis. He's got that foggy baritone voice singing, like, you know, country versions of Christmas songs, but he does it so tastefully. You know, it's not with any like kind of modern pomp and circumstance. It's just, gets in there, he sings the down-home Christmas songs, he sounds amazing. I think that album's even from the late 80s. You know, there was other things we played, Garth Brooks, Mariah Carey, a lot of big songs, but those are the two that I still listen to year after year, and it kind of put me in that warm, fuzzy holiday place.
Gotcha. Yeah, I go towards the oldies, but it's interesting when you, like, when I listen to Christmas music now with my family here in Portland, like, obviously my wife has a, like, her oldies are different than mine. Mm-hmm. We share the same affection for the Nat King Cole and the Otis Redding Christmas music and the Andy Williams Christmas music. But, you know, I didn't grow up listening to Mariah Carey's Christmas songs, even though I know them, because you couldn't go without.
Because you've been to a mall in November or December, right, in the United States, right?
Exactly. And my family was in I guess my wife's family had a tradition that we would buy one of the new Christmas albums every Christmas. And so I think she's much more in tune with the more recent Christmas music, at least from the 90s. But I was curious to say, like, what do you think the greatest Christmas song is?
Just in terms of composition, like, what my favorite, or no matter who sings it?
I guess maybe it's the best. What do you think is the best Christmas song? And I don't know how to define best. This isn't just a good Christmas song. It's just a great song.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start, because I have an answer for this song. And I was thinking about it earlier this week when it was on our record player, but it's Wham's Last Christmas. I just think that song is such a good song.
It's an amazing song. I love that song. And I think any conversation about best Christmas songs would be problematic without Last Christmas on it.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And then I start looking at, like, what other great songs there are. And some artists have made amazing Christmas songs, or, like, covered amazing Christmas songs.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about, you know, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. They covered Please Come Home for Christmas. Unbelievable rendition. Like,
that's a good one.
Jackson 5 doing I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, which I was like, it's kind of an amazing. And obviously Mariah Carey's song. I don't know. What are your thoughts on kind of these great Christmas songs that also seem that they're all from a certain era? And I think we should talk about the modern era at some point.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, we had Wham in the 80s, Mariah Carey in the 90s. Going back to some of these older songs, there's a really good compilation called Soul Christmas. Mm-hmm. And some great tracks on there. Some are like more, Christmas standards covered by a really good artist. But there's songs like Backdoor Santa by Clarence Carter, mm-hmm. which is a really great song and is funny. And it's kind of irreverent. And I think there's a reason why artists in this style, especially like soul music and country music, work so well with Christmas, because you're kind of looking for music that's palatable to all ages and all types of people. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you can't really go wrong with the classics. It is when you get a little more modern day that things get a little trickier. And it's funny, because you talk about Last Christmas or All I Want for Christmas Is You, there aren't that many songs that get added to the canon year by year. I mean, seems like there's a big Christmas song once in a decade or so.
I guess that's what I'm saying, is like the canon of Christmas songs is kind of set, and it feels like we've gone a long time without getting an addition to it. Or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I actually wanted to talk about that today, because I have come across a Christmas album released this year, Nick, of all original songs. That is actually really great. And you know, you as the sock master should be aware of this album. This is J.D. McPherson's album, Socks, which came out earlier this year. And there's a song on the album Socks about how socks are everybody's least favorite Christmas gift. But mm-hmm. he's kind of like a 50s-inspired, you know, rockabilly artist, really meaning like rock meets hillbilly, because he's kind of got a country vibe to him as well. But he wrote like 12 or 11, or I forget how many tracks are on this album, of really great, really fun Christmas songs that don't, you know, make you feel embarrassed for the person singing that. Because I get embarrassed a lot of times with some of these new Christmas songs. Even like the Killers do a Christmas single every year, and a lot of times it's not very good.
Right.
But I like this album is a lot of fun. It's the kind of music that you want to hear around Christmas time, you know, like twangy guitars, upbeat melodies, a little bit of melancholy in some of the songs. And I really recommend it. I think I'll be playing it a lot around the house this year.
Okay. I write that down. I hadn't heard about it, so I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, there's a song about a skinny Santa Claus on there that I really like. and, you know, just lots of socks.
Nice, nice. So do you have a clear favorite Christmas song? Or?
I mean, I really like Silent Night, not to sound too, like, old-fashioned, but
right.
The song that kind of gives me chills every year, and even, like, going to church growing up and hearing people sing that song would kind of, you know, make me just, it's the song that makes me feel a little more like the power of the Christmas season, if not the song that puts like a spring in my step.
Yeah, that's a great song. I really like it.
I mean, there are also, you know, I think it's 2 years ago, favorite of the pod, Casey Musgrave, put out a very Casey Christmas. And that's a record that I like as well. And, you know, it's a mixture of standards with some original songs on there and some duets. She's got Willie Nelson and Leon Bridges on songs. Oh, you know another song, Nick, I really like? Feliz Navidad.
Oh, that's a great classic. Classic. Great song.
That song puts a spring in my step. That song gets me excited. That's what I want to go shopping to.
Yeah. And it comes on, you're like, oh, okay. And then you find yourself, you're just singing it all day long.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, it's a great Christmas song. I agree.
So what, do you have a definitive favorite then?
Yeah, I think it's Wham. It has to be. but it's also a song I don't listen, like when we have on Christmas Day, I probably wouldn't put it on. Like we just put kind of the classics on.
Mm-hmm.
But right now around the house when we put Christmas music on, like Wham's definitely part of it.
It's funny, I first heard that song through a cover. I hadn't heard Wham's original version of it, but Manic Street Preachers did a cover of Last Christmas.
Oh, really?
It was the first time I ever heard it. It sounded great then, too.
So many covers around Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because like we said, there's only a handful of songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is Mariah Carey, that's 1994. Is that really the last, you know, canonical Christmas song that we have?
So in this playlist that we've had, I should check it out because my wife's the one that puts it on. I don't know if it's an album or a compilation of greatest hits or something. The most recent one on that playlist is the Destiny's Child, 8 Days of Christmas.
Mm, great choice.
And I have to say, I don't know if it's a good Christmas song, but it is a great song. It's definitely a Destiny's Child song, and it makes me want to see a reunion here sometime.
Well, sometime I'll have to go on the record on the podcast about my attempt to become the fourth member of Destiny's Child when I was in high school, but that's another story. you know, Sia did try. She put out an album of Christmas songs that didn't really seem to stick. And, you know, she's a great pop songwriter, and you would think that that'd be something she'd be able to do. But so is Brandon Flowers. So it's a difficult thing, right. I think. You know, like, where's Justin Bieber's Christmas song? Like,
I'm surprised. But, I mean, it feels like sometimes the Christmas album is a cash grab. And I feel like the ones that really succeed are the ones that – and I don't mean that, like, Sia and Brandon Flowers didn't really try. But, like, you know, Mariah Carey, she kind of hits, like, the jackpot in terms of, like, what a Christmas song should be and how, like – it seems like the songwriting was just, you know, better than most Christmas songs, I guess. It didn't feel lazy. It's
just like a kind of a tossed off thing to check the Christmas boxes.
Yeah. And Wham is the same way. Like Last Christmas just feels like a great Wham song.
Yeah. It's one of the best Wham songs.
Yeah.
For sure. Are there other artists that you would like to hear tackle Christmas music?
I mean, there's obviously, I'd love to hear, like, wouldn't a Frank Ocean Christmas album be amazing?
I could see it being kind of in the vein of that Moon River cover that he did. I think it would be in the sad genre of Christmas music, but that's like the Aaron Neville album is kind of in that genre too.
Because I would think like I could see a world where Pyramids is a Christmas song, and it's just if you change the lyrics with just to be more Christmas, it'd be an amazing Christmas song. No, I mean there's a bunch of bands I'd like to see try, and I think bands don't do it because it's a risky move,
and it signals a whole lot of upside. It's
right.
It's very tough to pull off.
Yeah, it probably feels like a cash grab, and I don't know that I want to go there now. But it's interesting that there was a certain time where it was almost like feels like a cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think it'd be great to see a band like imagine if Deer Hunter didn't put out an album for 2 years and they just did an amazing Christmas album. That was like just a great album, but was a Christmas album.
I'm just having trouble imagining this. Is it going to sound like Deer Hunter, but have Christmassy lyrics, or are they going to be, you know, changing their style? I mean, is it going to be a Deer Hunter album that I can go to Nordstrom's and like bop along to while I'm trying to pick out gifts for, you know, my cousins? Or I don't know.
I don't know. With Brandon Cox, I imagine it'd be something pretty great.
I was thinking.
I'd imagine.
Go ahead.
I'd imagine he'd throw in like one or two covers in there.
Oh yeah, hopefully.
And I'd hope they'd be like, they wouldn't be like obscure covers. They'd be like Jingle Bells, you know. But Deer Hunter plays Jingle Bells.
I go for a straight Deer Hunter's Christmas covers album. I think I'd rather have that than Bradford Cox doing a bunch of Christmas originals, but maybe not. I don't know. Two artists I thought of off the top of my head right now that I could think of doing like an original Christmas album. Number one is Robin. Maybe like be a nice palate cleanser after Honey. And I just like to see, I think she gets the joy and the melancholy that is what I really like out of a great Christmas song. She does that a lot in her songs. Mm-hmm. So I could see that working somehow if she ever got inspired. I don't know how big Christmas is in Sweden. It seems like it would be big, you know, trees and snow. And then the more like out of left field idea I thought was, I think Vince Staples could do like a really nice Christmas. It probably had to be a Christmas EP because it would be, you know, he either does really long albums or really short albums for some reason. I don't know what's going on with him, but I could just see him having like a really funny take on Christmas and maybe getting some like guests on there. And just, I mean, Tyler, the Creator sort of came out with some Christmas songs this year because mm-hmm. he did a few songs for the Grinch movie.
Yeah.
So I could see it being in that vein, but you know, even maybe even a little bit more energetic.
I agree. Wow. If Bradford Cox, Robin, and Vince, if you're listening, just please make this happen. Next 2019, we need a great Christmas album.
And you know, if all else fails, you can just do Christmas forever. I think you'll see with like JD McPherson with his record, I think he's kind of pivoting himself to be, you know, a Christmas guy. You can do Christmas tours. Your album sells every year. It's not a bad move, especially if, you know, you've been kind of trying to break through for a few years and you need something that'll kind of get you on the morning talk shows on TV, maybe get you on Ellen with some Christmas songs, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, that it can be really good for a band's profile.
It's the Michael Bublé formula.
There you go. And with that, the Michael Bublé formula comes to a close. This is what we practice on every episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. Nick just gave away the secret, but hopefully not too many people are listening at the end of the show. They'll know what we're talking about.
Exactly.
But if you guys had a great year of listening to the show, rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. The next episode is going to be crazy. If anybody wants to give us their top 10 list of the year or their favorite album of the year, write it into us at Juicebox Music Pod. It'd be curious to juiceboxmusicpod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We'd definitely be curious to see your list as well.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm excited to chat top tens here very soon, Hunter.
I've been working on this for a couple weeks now. It's pretty agonizing. I don't want to have like 20, you know, runners up, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Getting down to 10 has been really tough for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to get to my list.
Well, everybody, I hope you have a great holiday season. We'll be back very soon to start off 2019. Nick, fare thee well. Keep warm in your socks. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Hunter.
See you. Bye-bye. Soon. Bye.